Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 206, Plant-Based Italian with Alice Carbone Tench. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking. Getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun, growing our skills and our confidence. That's what it's all about around here. And today, I can tell you what, personally, I learned a lot with my conversation with my guest, who will be joining me in a few minutes. Alice Carbone Tench stops by. And we talk about her approach to Italian cuisine, plant-based. So she is vegan. So we talk about different ingredients and techniques and approaches perhaps that you can put to work in your own kitchen, your own lifestyle to explore more plant-based cookery, especially in Italian cuisine. We're going to get to that in a few minutes, but of course I have a few housekeeping items to take care of first. All right, most important, the show notes for this episode are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/206. That will get you to links to Alice's blog, her upcoming cookbook, her fantastic Instagram page where she hosts a live cooking show every Monday afternoon, along with a few other links I put together from various things we talked about in this conversation. So kitchencounterpodcast.com/206 in your web browser to get to the show notes. If you'd like to get a hold of me directly, please send an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. You can also find me on lurking around on most of the social media stuff. Facebook, we have a great little Facebook community over at, it's a private group, and the easiest way to get to it actually is just to go to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. You can also check out the public page at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. I'm over on Instagram too at Kitchen Counter Podcast and on Twitter at TKC Podcast. Also, if you'd like to support the show, you can buy me a coffee over at buymeacoffee.com/TKC Podcast. Wow, that was a lot of links to blurt out there in short order. Listen, it's all in the show notes, so don't worry about writing anything down. Just head over there and you can get a hold of all of this stuff. Last but not least, the Kitchen Counter Podcast is a proud member of the Nitty Grits Podcasts, which is a network out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. You can find information on other Nitty Grits podcasts, as well as information on the Southern Food and Beverage Museum down at southernfood.org. You know what? That reminds me, there are a couple of things I want to mention really quickly. One of our awesome members of the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break, which is that private Facebook group I mentioned, traveled to New Orleans in January, I believe for a college football bowl game, if I'm remembering my facts correctly, but also stopped by, after hearing about it on this podcast, the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, had a great time. And little did I know that Emily Banks Wooten, who is the member I'm talking about, and Emily, I hope I pronounced your last name right, she writes a regular column in her local paper back in Texas. So she did a nice little write-up of her visit to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. So I thought that was pretty cool. I shared it in the Facebook group. But I'll tell you what, I'll also put a link in the show notes to the write-up. So Emily, glad you heard about the museum on the show and carved out a little bit of time when you took your trip down to New Orleans. Very cool. While I'm at it, I want to share one more shout out to a listener who was gracious enough to include the show in her blog. So Grace Lane Smith has an art studio in Nova Scotia. Grace is an oil painter. She paints these beautiful landscape, oceanscapes, I guess you would call them. Paints coastlines and things like that. I'm certainly inspired by the beautiful part of the world in which she lives. But Grace was cool enough to include me on her website in a blog post that she called Six Favorite Food Podcasts That I Play While Painting, and the Kitchen Counter Podcast made her shortlist. And I know, and you've listened to the podcast for a long time, and I really, really appreciate it. So thank you for that. If you all want to check out Grace's wonderful artwork, head over to gracelanesmithart.com. Again, I'll put all that in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/206. All right, let's get to this week's episode. Alice Carbone Tench stops by to talk about plant-based Italian. Now, you know, if you've listened to the podcast, or if you haven't, this will be news, maybe, but I am not a vegetarian or vegan myself. I don't cook exclusively plant-based. You know, I grew up in a very meat-centric household, German-influenced household, lots of pork, lots of beef. Yeah, there were vegetables and things like that, obviously, but meat was always kind of a primary consideration, it felt like, when, or at least it seemed to me, when my mother was cooking or my dad made any food, and certainly my grandparents. For me, if I'm looking to do more plant-based cooking, which I am, it's always a current I feel like I have to swim against just because it's so ingrained in my childhood, my growing up, just my entire food and cooking history has been very meat-centric. So I'm always fascinated, intrigued, and very grateful to talk to people who have interesting ideas about how to do more plant-based cooking. And in this conversation with Alice, we talk about some of the mental approaches you can take to, I guess, get over this idea that everything has to have meat in it when you're cooking, managing your own expectations when you're moving maybe from a meat-centric to more of a plant-centric lifestyle. And she brings all sorts of interesting tips and tricks to the conversation as well. For example, I did not know that freezing tofu changes its texture to make it a little more chewy and meat-like. Alice talks about how she can fairly well mimic the texture of cooked chicken by this technique of freezing her tofu before using it. So lots of interesting stuff in this conversation. Again, the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/206 will have links to Alice's Instagram, her website, her book, along with a few other things I collected together after our conversation that you might hear about and be interested in. All right, without further ado, here's my conversation on plant-based Italian with Alice Carbone Tench. Alice, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Roger.
I want to talk to you today because you have some really cool stuff going on. Well, first of all, you're on Instagram. You've got cool stuff going on in there. You've got this idea of plant-based Italian cooking that I would love to explore a little bit with you because, full disclosure, I'm not a vegetarian or a vegan. I have nothing against vegetarianism or veganism. My philosophy is whatever you want to cook and eat, go nuts, right? Why don't you give me the thumbnail sketch of who you are and, you know, why you're talking to me today. You've written a book. You find yourself in the kitchen cooking. Are you a new home cook? Are you coming back to cooking after a period that you didn't? I'll stop talking and let you go.
I think I was always a cook, and I stepped away from the kitchen for a long time because I suffered for most of my life from an eating disorder. But I've always been a cook. I have the most vivid memories of watching my grandmother cook. And those memories were frozen. And I guess when I started my journey of recovery, I started in the kitchen. All these memories were back, almost like a magical thing. And cooking has been my healing. At first, I think that I got to cooking because it was controlling. In a way, when you're cooking, you're controlling the ingredients, the quantities. And then it went from controlling to freedom. So I don't know whether I'm a brand new cook in a way.
That's interesting. So it's almost like you had, it was almost in a, like lying dormant for a while in you.
I think so.
But
yeah.
It was waiting for an opportunity, because it sounds to me like when you got back to the kitchen and started working through this, it just kind of came back to you. And what a wonderful thing to have, you know, memories of your grandmother. That's a home cook, nothing better.
She also left me 30 years of diaries, which are, they're in there. You can see them there in my closet. There are 30 years of diaries, which she wrote down everything, every menu, every, there's actually a page in the book when I scanned a page of her, when she wrote all the menus that she ate in 1995. So it's been writing and food together. I didn't know these things about her. I discovered them. And so it's the cooking, but also the writing about cooking and food and what it can do, what it does to me, that I found was my bliss, as Joseph Campbell calls it.
And then at some point a few years ago, you decided to go onto Instagram, and you did Instagram. What's that?
It sounds very, I decided to do the Instagram.
You had
thing.
To do it. You were compelled, gosh. Right? Yes. So you're doing, you have this, your concept is Instagram to table. And I think every mm-hmm. Monday night, even currently.
Every Monday night.
Yeah, you do.
Every
like
Monday
a live
night at 5 p.m. Pacific, almost 3 years. So in June, it's going to be a 3-year anniversary. And I cook with people. We have basically, we're gathering around virtual table as I cook, and we have conversations about what's going on in the world, about food, about movies. It's really a dinner party. It's one of the biggest joys of my life to have this dinner party with people.
It shows. And actually, I don't think it was alive, but I was watching a video from today, and maybe we can talk about this recipe later because it sounds great and
the
very
mushrooms.
Simple. Yeah, the miso marsala mushrooms. So we'll put a pin in that and circle back to that.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about your book and maybe your social media in a little bit, but let's dive in a little bit.
The Italian plant-based.
Yes, the Italian plant-based. Let's dive into that. Lay out some parameters for me. Are you completely vegan? Because I know in your book, you talk about using cheese and seafood, and I see recipes like a frittata with eggs. So where do you see yourself in the spectrum there?
I became vegan after the book was in print. At that time, when I wrote the book and I was doing all I was testing all the recipes, I was still using some dairy. I haven't had meat and fish in a long time, but I was still doing some dairy and some eggs. And then I transitioned to vegan as the book was being printed. And actually, I had my book launch at the farmer's market a few weeks ago, and I remade a lot of the cookies that are in the book. Entirely vegan. It's been such a fun experimental journey to bake and cook vegan with ingredients like aquafaba, which is, you know, the water from the chickpea can that we throw away otherwise. It's a magical ingredient.
It is.
I've done meringue.
Yeah, meringue blows my mind.
It's ridiculous, yeah. You know? It is. And so this vegan adventure, it's been really fascinating for me. And so I wasn't, like in the book I talk about it, I was a meat eater and a hardcore meat eater, because I come from a world where, well, first of all, meat is expensive. And, you know, my grandparents were in the war. It's, you know, there's this concept of you don't throw away anything. And so the Italian culture is still very much when you eat meat, you eat the entire thing. Mm-hmm. There are stories in the book when I talk about, you know, the head of a rabbit and how I would wear the jaw of the rabbit as a necklace. I really love that stuff. Like my grandmother used to make this amazing stew of lungs and hearts with red onion and wine, because it was expensive. So when you had the meat, you made sure not to waste any part of it. But if you look at Italian cuisine, and I think that that's actually very true for a lot of cultures, the poor traditional base food is plant-based, because not everybody could afford meat. So some of the most traditional Italian dishes that have been, you know, reinvented. They are plant-based. So it's not really hard. Of course, you're not going to have, you know, rabbit with olives and or like Venetian liver. But I recreated a few weeks ago one traditional dish from Piemonte, where I'm from. It's a region in the very northwest. Is that in Italian, it's called vitello tonnato, which means veal with tuna sauce. Mm-hmm. So you mix this. It's like a kind of a surf and turf. So you have these very thin slices of veal with this mayo, caper, tuna cream on top. And I remade it using seitan and the sauce to give that tuna mm-hmm. flavor. You use a tiny bit of nori seaweed in your caper and vegan mayo sauce. And you have this amazing dish that gives you all the traditional flavors of Northern Italy in an entirely vegan, with entirely vegan ingredients. I find it fascinating. And you go into a vegan dish for what it is, not expecting exactly, you know, if you expect the bloody steak from a piece of tempeh, you're never going to have that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I hear from a lot of my listeners who are interested in cooking with less meat for whatever reasons. And I think one of the things you hit the nail on the head is it's this idea of like mimicry, right? You're trying to mimic, you're trying to make a meatless dish mimic a dish that would traditionally have meat. And people more often than not are disappointed when they try to do that, right? Because they're not going into it with the idea that this is...
With the adventure of the...
Exactly. How can I approximate some flavors or maybe just create something totally new that is delicious on its own merit? What advice would you have for folks who, and this could be Italian or otherwise, but who want to cook with less meat? Whether that's maybe they're doing like a trying to add one dinner a week with no meat or whatever it is. Do you have any thoughts? Certainly, you've probably run into these questions.
Well, first of all, it's really getting into it with the sense of wanting to experience something new. For what it is. That's the first, because, you know, expectations is the first, you know, if you expect something and you're not going to have that. But also to find out that I mentioned Venetian liver. I never understood how the flavor that you get from this Venetian liver, which is a liver that is cooked slowly with onions and red wine. And the key ingredient is a bay leaf. By chance, recreated this with a plant-based protein. It's called pamfu. It's made of 100% pumpkin seeds. It's a tofu made of pumpkin seeds. That's all there is in it, pumpkin seeds. It's delicious. And it comes in a tofu, like tofu shape. It's a little green. Mm-hmm. It's very nutty, very fed. It's pure protein. And I made it with onions and put the bay leaf. And I realized that the ingredient, and it felt like eating Venetian liver. And so what I would suggest is really use the flavors. Don't expect tofu to be a steak. It will never be. But what is to make, I don't know, a beef stew really tastes good. If you look at it, it's all the things that are in around it, right? The herbs and the onion and the when you caramelize the vegetables are filled with flavor. So to really play with the flavors that are usually a side dish, they can become the reason why then you eat that dish. And really have fun with it. That's the most, I know that it's cliche, but going to a vegan meal or ingredient, which with an idea of trying something new. And
I agree with you. I think, like, I have any room to talk about this because I'm not vegan. But, I mean, to your point, I think go for something new. Look for recipes that are adventurous and interesting and aren't trying to just replace a meal that you would expect with meat because – Or look for recipes that can easily, you can just remove the meat and they're just as delicious.
Today I made a tofu. I recently discovered that when you buy tofu and you freeze it in the box with the water, then you thaw it naturally in the fridge overnight.
Okay.
There's something that happens to the texture because the ice crystals.
Yeah, they probably
expand
and then
expand, yeah. Right? When you thaw it overnight and then you press it to get all the water out. Today I grilled it, and I'm not kidding. Like, I just added to a salad and it was chicken. If you think about chicken itself, you would never eat raw chicken, right?
Yeah.
So raw tofu, you shouldn't expect to, unless you're my daughter, you shouldn't expect to eat raw tofu and say, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever heard that, but.
yeah. And she loves it. Like, that's how she likes to eat her tofu. But there are ways, actually. But that's part of the experimental and the fun, you know, freeze the tofu and the texture is a little chewy. And it really absorbs whatever marinade or condiment you put in it.
It probably loses a lot of liquid because, you, like you said, in the freezing process, it expands and it breaks down.
So you don't have that mushy thing that it can be offsetting.
Interesting. So what are some of your, let's talk Italian then. So what are some of your favorite Italian dishes? Let me put you on the spot, actually. What are some dishes in Italian that traditionally would have meat that you think would totally blow people's minds without meat? I don't know if that question makes sense, but
it does.
Like, what are the dishes where you would serve to somebody and be like, there's no meat in this? You've got to be kidding me.
I make ragu, and I promise you, you could not tell the difference. There's this thing called TVP that is texturized vegetable protein. It's soy, so you have to be able to eat soy. It's a dehydrated soy, and it looks like ground meat.
Okay.
But there's really no, I'm a very clean vegan. Like, I don't buy junk food. This is very, so you soak it and then you saute like it was ground meat. You can never tell. So you can make meatballs, you can make meatloaves, you can make ragu. You can make fantastic, you know, eggplant parmigiana without the ham and using vegan cheese, and you would not tell the difference. You can't tell the difference. I mean, you can, of course, if you put like a nice buffalo, you can't tell the difference.
I'm a little skeptical.
No, you can't tell the difference. No, it's true. No, you can't tell the difference. However, I don't miss it anymore.
I see. You're right. That's probably a key distinction, right? You probably can tell the difference, but at a certain point.
Of course. No, you can tell the difference between a good buffalo, you know, and especially you're talking like, you know, good ingredients. But you really, ragu and meatballs. There's a recipe in my book that is bread meatballs. My grandmother used to make those, and they're traditionally from Puglia. The southeast, the heel of Italy, where my other grandmother is from. You know, those are poor meatballs. She calls them poor meatballs because, you know, when people didn't have anything other than bread and some parsley and garlic, that's what they are made of. And then you cook them in tomato sauce and they're delicious. They're delicious. And it takes pale bread to make and water.
All right, let's pivot for a second. So I know in your book you say that bell peppers are your favorite vegetable, and you've got and I know we're not in bell pepper season, but you know, you can still get them. So you know, if you don't want to wait until summertime, you could still try some of these things. You have a really great recipe for a peperonata.
Yes.
Tell me about that a little bit, if you don't mind. If you start, what is a peperonata, and just some of the fundamentals on maybe how you put it together. If you don't mind.
Peperonata is a very long, but very long. Is bell peppers of different colors cooked at very low heat for a long time with some caramelized with onion and some basil and optional little bit of tomato sauce. I like it without tomatoes. And the trick, like most of good food, is this low cook. So you kind of caramelize the bell peppers. They become very soft and they become sweet and with the onion and pinch of sugar, coconut sugar is always the trick. It's a very comforting dish. It becomes almost a cream.
Yeah. I would imagine the bell peppers really break down and become quite soft.
It's one, bell peppers, like tomatoes, is one of those vegetables that it's good either raw or that they have that acidity that if you cook it for just, you know, 15 minutes, it's not enough. It has, you need to either cook it a lot or cook it really little, you know, like a grilled bell pepper or a raw bell pepper. And so this low cook, it's, is the trick. Very low heat, mix, you know, stir it and just let it be. It releases all this beautiful essence.
Now that's a recipe.
That makes me want to have it. And I know, I'm not going to have it until summer because I buy sustainably.
I'm sorry. I had to ask. Because just the name of it, pepperonata, just makes me hungry. And I just look at the recipe, I'm like, I can't wait to do that,
I think. It is a name that gets it. Yeah. There's
It just sounds like, give me some of that. You know what I mean?
You can pour it over a polenta.
Yeah.
Or, you know, traditionally served with chicken. There's recipes with pepperonata and chicken. But I would really love it over a polenta. Mm. Oh, yeah.
That does sound good. That does sound good. So that's a recipe you said that takes a little bit of time. Let's talk for a minute about recipes that are relatively quick. Let's say I want to make some plant-based Italian dinners, but I work all day and, let's say I have maybe a maximum of an hour in the evenings to put something together, but let's say maybe even 30 minutes. Like what would you spin my way to try out like a 30-minute meal, plant-based Italian?
Which is always what I have to do because, you know, the time, especially when you have a family and, you know.
I get it.
I am a big fan of pasta with vegetables, with a very high vegetable, more vegetables than pasta. It's something that I grew up with. One of my favorite is, I make this weekly, is broccoli rabe. Or chicory, dandelion green. Blanch the vegetables after you have rinsed them. I just like to do that for like bitter greens because they release a little bit of that extra bitterness.
Yeah.
Then just for like 2 or 3, 5 minutes at the most in salted boiling water. Then take them out, saute them with some garlic and extra virgin olive oil. Meanwhile, in the same water, that's the trick, boil the pasta. Al dente. Drain the pasta, toss it with the vegetables, and you have a complete meal. And then let it, you know, I always use a little bit of cooking water of the pasta because it has the gluten. Gluten is a vegan person best friend, by the way, because it creates that creaminess without having to add any cheese or cream. So then saute the pasta with the vegetables for just a few minutes with some of the cooking water. And you have a perfectly balanced, delicious plant-based meal that has the vegetables and you add chili peppers. If you like chili flakes, you can add dry tomatoes on top. You can add capers and olives. I like to add capers a lot. But it takes, in total, probably really no more than 30 minutes. And most recipes that I make are that fast.
Yeah, that's pasta, I think, is an overlooked. And I think, you know, pasta is somewhat... Depending on where you get your food, you know, information from, I guess pasta is a bit vilified in some circles. I think
pasta doesn't have to be unhealthy.
Right. Yeah. Everything in moderation. Right. And you're not in your version here. You're not loading it down with cheese and cream and, you know, unhealthy things.
No. And even if you put a little bit of it on top, like, for example, there's an almond ricotta on the market, which is fantastic. And you can make your own ricotta, by the way, it's so easy. It takes 2 hours, but little attention to it, if you ever want to know. But if you don't load it up, you know, the flavor doesn't mean you can have an explosion of flavor without loading a pasta up with unhealthy things.
Yeah. I think a lot, and I'm speaking in gross generalizations here, but it seems to me, and maybe this is me exposing my biases, but it seems to me a lot of Americanized Italian food, I think people perceive it as very cheesy, very heavy, right? But it does not have to be. And your recipes are testimony to that. I mean, you have a lot in there. Real quick before we hop over and talk about your book, though, my favorite Italian recipe of all time is risotto. Uh-huh. I could eat it every day in various ways. What's your favorite? Do you like risotto, first of all? And what's your preparation of choice?
I love risotto. There's a recipe actually with stinging nettles they're hard to find. There's a few vendors. I live in Los Angeles where we're lucky with the weather. Stinging nettles risotto is amazing. I love risotto. I actually really love, there's a dish called farinata, which is a great example of plant-based food, by the way. It's like this chickpea, the ingredients are four. It's chickpea flour, water and a good extra virgin olive oil is a dish typical from Liguria, where Cinque Terre are, that Mediterranean Sea region. And it becomes, you bake it. And it's this, it's half between a pizza and a pancake that usually is served with a lot of pepper and black pepper and rosemary. And it's basically just chickpea flour, water, and extra virgin olive oil and salt.
And what's the baked what's called
and
again?
It's crust. It has this kind of this golden crust. It's called farinata. There is a recipe in the book.
Farinata.
That's a great plant-based food that then you can, you know, top with something if you want to, whether it's cheese or you can just eat with a side of vegetables. That's probably one of my ultimate Italian. It's Italian street food. It's so good. It's so easy to make. Also.
I love working with chickpea flour, actually. Chickpea flour is wonderful. I love chickpeas anyway.
Yep.
So I am definitely going to check that out. So let's talk about your book for just a second, which is Eating Again, The Recipes That Healed Me. And you already alluded to it a little bit at the beginning of the conversation, your personal history around food and eating and getting back into the kitchen and things like that. You call this a food memoir, but I'm actually really struck by how many recipes are in this book. It seems like the recipe to memoir, it's very recipe heavy. So I would really consider this a cookbook with some great stories sprinkled throughout. And the writing is wonderful when you do go into the memoir portions. I love reading, and it's not all roses, right? You've got some stories of all various sorts in there from the good times and the not so great times. I mean, just tell me a little bit about, like, why did you write the book? I mean, I know you say in your introduction that you were wanting to sort of document some things like recipes, but why a memoir? Why not just make a blog online and, put your recipes into it, for example?
That's a very interesting question. Why? Well, the reason I started writing the recipe, I had a blog. I still have a blog. I newsletter every month. And some of those essays that were for me healing in themselves, just writing them, I learned so much about what happened, why certain things went a certain way. It was healing to write those essays. And the recipes I wrote because I was trying to remake certain things and I would find myself going on my blog where the recipes were to look for the ingredients. And so I decided to just write them down and I realized, oh, I have a lot of recipes here. I could, I published a book, a while ago. My first, it was a novel and it didn't really go the way I wanted to go, but I'm a writer. I'm a writer. I just can't tell. Every time that I remember, getting all this rejection, every time I was like, that's it. I'm not going to write anymore. And I'm a writer. I can't help myself but writing. I do write, and write heals me. I wanted this to be on paper. I wanted people to buy it and to have it. And I wanted people to read those stories because, I would read Joan Didion's stories and find myself in there. And I wanted to do that for me to reread them. I reread them sometimes. And for other people, I wanted it to be on paper. It feels like when it's on paper, you really did it.
Yep. I see what you mean about that. Yeah, that makes sense. I've not published anything on paper, but I totally understand where you're coming from. You've got a lot of stuff in here, recipes inspired by your grandmother, of course. You've got a whole section on pasta, you've got a section on cookies, and then you do a little tie-in with your Instagram, right? You get your recipes that you did on Instagram, and these are great, great recipes. I mean, I could just list them off, but pepperonata's in here somewhere. inspired by your mom.
My mom,
cakes, tarts, and puddings, and things like that. And I want to emphasize, too, that we're talking about plant-based Italian, but you do have some recipes in here that aren't strictly plant-based, but not many. I mean, this really does hew pretty close to a plant-based.
Yeah. And also, there are a lot of, there's an appendix at the end where I included all my followers, by the way. I made it a community thing where I wanted to know whether they had questions. And I mentioned them all. In this appendix, I I want really people to have fun. I want people to open this book and I don't want them to think that, oh, this is something unattainable. I will never make this. I have so many beautiful cookbooks in my house. Yes. Where I say, oh gosh, I never do that. And also I want to give people the freedom to add an ingredient that they may want to add, or if they don't have, you know, I often talk about Buddha's hand, which is this beautiful mm-hmm. precursor of lemon that not everybody can find everywhere, and it has a short season. And there are ways of making vegan buttermilk when I talk about buttermilk, or I love people to put their own spin, because that's what cooking then is all about, right? We were talking like yep. about if you like it, you're going to make it again. And you're going, you know, cooking has to be I'm going to give you the directions, but then and I'm going to give you options. Take the one that resonates with you the most. That's how you get people in the kitchen, I think, when it's not a rigid, you have to do this, you know, play with it.
And you know, the other side of that too, or what goes along with that, is it's like giving people permission to experiment. You know, cooking, like unless you burn something, it's really hard. It's mm-hmm. really hard to totally screw up if you're even loosely following a recipe. I think people who aren't experienced cooks don't realize that. They're like, if I do not do mm-hmm. exactly as this is, I'm going to have an inedible pile of whatever. That's not true. Even when dishes don't turn out, you're learning something.
Yeah.
And you can probably absolutely. Eat it. I mean, there's ways you can make things inedible, but it's very hard to do, really, I think.
In the section of the cookies, one of the reasons why I created that cookie section is that, you know, pastry is another thing. So pastry has some rules that you can't really overlook or not follow.
True.
Pastry is science.
Absolutely.
And so I wanted to create a series of cookies that are plant-based, and this happened during the lockdown, that were really forgiving. And these cookies, you can really change things, and you don't have to have the pastry technique, which I don't have, by the way. I wanted to see if people have fun with pastry without being pastry chefs? And the answer is yes. I'm very proud of that section because I'm not a pastry chef. And when I saw, oh my God, you can make these amazing cookies and you can kind of switch the ingredients and mix them all together. You don't have to have like three different items in the kitchen, like a food processor. And that was a big part of making those cookies.
And that's a great point. I'm not a pastry person either. I'm not, I think I am more than I think, because when I do it, I do fairly well, mm-hmm. but I always tell myself I don't bake. I'm not a baker. My wife's a great baker. I'm not, but I do find that cookies are a great entry point into the world of bacon.
Definitely.
Bread, yep. of course, yep. because everybody wanted to make bread and everybody still wants, which is great. But cookies, there's just something, they're like low risk, high reward, if that makes sense. If you blow a batch of cookies, it's not like you've been fermenting the, you know, cookie dough for three weeks and it's like, this is awful, right?
cookies. Even that, by the way, to kill a sourdough starter, you really have to abandon that little thing for, like, it's hard to kill it. You can always revive it. I revived my sourdough starter several times. You really need to be a bad parent, worst parent.
Very neglectful. like your plants will die long before your sourdough starter will probably go. But no, this is great. So. Are we forgetting to tell anybody about plant-based Italian, something that you really want to get by, or have we covered it, do you think, in general?
I really want, you know, try. That's my, please try. And always remember that simple is better. Italian food is simple. Often recipes have 4-5 ingredients at the most. You don't need 10 ingredients to make a good dish.
So where can we find you, Alice, online? We've already talked about Instagram. So why don't you share your Instagram? And do you have recipes too on your blog
that people can check out? I do. I should be better at updating my website. But yes, I do. It's alicecarbone.com. It's my name and last name.com. And Instagram is at alicecarbonetench, which is my two last names.
And I will put all these in the show notes. So if people don't catch that, I will link to you. So
yeah, really, come on a Monday show. It's really a beautiful community of people just gathering and having a good time.
When do those happen? Monday at when?
Every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific on my Instagram Live. And it's a beautiful group of people.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. Looking forward to following more plant-based Italian adventures on Instagram. And come back soon.
Thank you. It was a beautiful, beautiful conversation. Thank you so much. Bye, everybody.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Alice Carbone Tench. Again, the show notes for this episode, where you can find links to Alice's website, book, or Instagram, especially if you want to go check out that great live cooking show she does every Monday afternoon, head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/206. Alice, thank you so much for coming on the show. I can't wait for summertime to roll around up here in Oregon so I can get some nice, sweet, fresh bell peppers and make up a batch of pepperonata. It's on my list. I'm counting down the days on the calendar. All right, everybody, that is going to do it for another episode of the podcast for this week. Don't forget to head over to southernfood.org to check out the Nitty Grits podcast and all the other cool stuff that the Southern Food and Beverage Museum has going on. And also, don't forget to tell your friends and your family if you're getting some value, you're finding this podcast interesting, and you think they might as well. Tell them about it. Tell them how to find podcasts on their smartphone or the computer. If they're not already familiar with how to do that, it really does help to grow our nice community of home cooks here over at the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I hope you're inspired to get into the kitchen. Maybe you head over to Alice's website and find one of her recipes and give a plant-based Italian dish a try in your kitchen. But whatever you do, enjoy the process, enjoy the journey, have fun, and spend some quality time with your family and your friends. Until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.